Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy for Saturday, July 14th. I'm your host, Yvonne Brown, coming to you live from Chicago, Illinois, on the second Saturday of each month. Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy is an interactive live internet talk radio show that focuses on how to take advantage of the opportunities that life sends your way. The program explores obstacles overcome by ordinary people with extraordinary results and what inspires or motivates them to take positive actions that make their dreams a reality. I know a little about that myself, as I've had 10 careers. I started out as a fashion model, then a rock and roll singer, a corporate consultant, an adjunct professor, and today I'm a professional speaker, author, coach, blogger, and radio show host. So, let's set the tone for today's program. Polybius once said, "Some men give up their designs when they have almost reached the goal, while others, on the contrary, obtain a victory by exerting, at the last moment, more vigorous efforts than ever before." Today's show is brought to you by Budgetpreneur.com. If you find you have very little money to invest in your business and yet still need to get things done, stop putting those things off. Go to Budgetpreneur.com. They provide the resources and tools to help you manage your business, save money, and increase revenue. Visit www.budgetpreneur.com and become a member today. Well, let's get started. And by the way, if you're listening online and calling to ask a question, please mute your computer first. The number to call is 646-381-4198. We have a great show for you today. Our topic is how neuroscience is leading the charge for improving organizational wellness. And our guest this month is John Serpa, author of Link, The Fascinating Ways Our Minds Connect. Let me introduce him to you. John Serpa is a public speaker. He's an author and has served for 25 years in various pharmaceutical and biotechnology corporations. John is a noted authority on employee management, organizational wellness, creative change management, and presentation design. John has undergraduate degrees in biology, organizational management, and an MBA from Johns Hopkins Carey Business School. In addition to his work as a public speaker and author, John brings in-depth corporate experience, having worked for such companies as GlaxoSmithKline, Boehringer, Ingelheim, and Johnson & Johnson. John Serpa is the author of The 100 Billion Blog. It's about how the latest discoveries in neuroscience and psychology can be leveraged to increase the performance of organizations in our personal lives. John resides in Chicago, Illinois, and is also an avid storm chaser and techno music producer. Welcome, John.
Well, thank you, Yvonne, for that warm welcome. It's great to be on your program today. And essentially, what I want to talk about that's in this book, Link, that you've alluded to, is how organizational leaders and participants can use the knowledge we have learned from neuroscientists over the last 80 years and behavioral psychologists to improve how our organizations function with very little expense. And within my book, I unpack this with a number of examples where organizations ranging from hospitals to large schools to Fortune 500 companies were able to radically improve their output and their engagement with very little money spent, but a strong underpinning of neuroscience and behavioral psychology.
Wonderful. I find neuroscience fascinating, so I'm truly looking forward to what you'll share with us today. First of all, what are mirror neurons, and how can they help us connect?
Mirror neurons are a special breed of neurons. They were discovered by two leading neuroscientists, Vitaro Galissi and Marco Iacoboni, and they were working on an experiment in Parma, Italy in the early 1990s, And they discovered these neurons by the fact that a monkey, which they were trying to get to imitate them, you know, monkey see, monkey do. The problem here was the monkey didn't want to imitate. It just sat there. And Marco Iacoboni kept manipulating peanuts in front of the monkey, and it would not do anything. However, Vitaro Galissi noticed on the computer monitor that neurons were firing in the monkey's brain that imitated the same neurons that would fire if it actually manipulated the peanuts, even though the monkey wasn't doing a thing. This led to a host of other experiments over the last 15 years or longer now that show that we have this neuron system called a mirror neuron system that actually allows you, Yvonne, or me, or anyone else, for our brains to be primed by what we're observing. So, for example, if we observe someone in an organization that is egocentric, that is very much out for themselves, our brain will actually prime neurons, which affects how we think and how we act. And that exactly came out of that experiment, just a simple experiment with the monkey, that his neuron system can change an organization because, again, what we say and do gets mirrored in other people's brains.
That's really interesting. Tell me, what are the four fundamental ways that our minds link together?
Well, the first one is neurological in a sense that we take in stimuli when we're observing something, so sound, sight, motion. This is the attentiveness piece of our brain. So I call it the L in link is listen attentively. So what that means is our brain is attentively listening. It's not just through our ears, it's through our eyes, it's through sensory that's around us. And so that's coming into our brain, causing neurons to start to fire, causing synaptic junctions to take place, setting ourselves up for thought process. That then leads to the I in link, which is involvement, because then we either want to become involved in what we're seeing and observing, or we want to retreat from what we're seeing and observing. So that's the involvement piece. The N is the nonverbal blinkers. As people are doing things, saying things, engaging in a certain way, it causes your nonverbal behavior to spring into action. And this gets missed so often in organizations. We miss all those nonverbal cues that people are signaling. And then the K of link is when you take all this together, you ultimately want to propagate knowledge flow amongst everyone in the organization. So if everyone is listening attentively, involving each other and noticing their nonverbal blinkers, the knowledge that comes out of that creates a sphere of influence that just expands like throwing a rock into a quiescent pond. It goes in all directions, and everyone in the organization, from the entry-level clerk to the CEO, benefits from that type of involvement.
That sounds wonderful. My question, though, is how would you be able to recognize that in a company and put it into action? I mean,
well,
it's wonderful
sure
to know that, but how do you recognize it and put it into action?
A great example is one of the first stories I tell in the book from Tom Malone, who bought NATD, North American Tool and Die. He bought this company in the early 1980s. It was floundering. The company was on the brink of bankruptcy. I won't get into all the metrics, but basically every single thing you can measure a company by, this one was in the bottom of the barrel. And so Tom Malone comes into this company and begins to practice the very things that are in my book as a CEO. So he goes down into the trenches of this company. He listens to people, engages with them one-on-one. He doesn't hire any consultants. He does not spend a single nickel, and within 2 years, NATD becomes the top performer in its industry. Its attrition rate drops to 4% from a previous 30%. Its quality of output went down to 4 sigma from an original 25% failure rate. I can go on and on. This company radically changed, and no one could quite understand it. This company was featured in a PBS special back in the 80s about how you can transform an organization with simple things that our brain really likes. And for example, he would actually go out, solicit people, sit down with them in the break rooms, on the plant floor, and actually listen, engage, get those people to open up. And then he acted on the input that he received from them, and he took this across the whole organization as a leader. And it spread. It becomes contagious. soon all the other management folks started emulating him, and it just became one of those snowball effects that's a good snowball effect, in that suddenly the whole organization was working the same way.
That's fantastic. That's pretty much along the lines of what my June interview used to turn his company around from being 87th in the world to third in the world and number one in all of North America. Pretty much the same thing. But as he said, change is difficult. Why do most organizational change management programs fail?
There was a study done in the Harvard Business Review about 12 years ago by Michael Beer and Nitin Norha, and they found that what you just said, about 75% of all change management programs fail. Now, if you put numbers to this, it's huge. So say a company is going to invest $10 million in a change management program, they have a 25% success rate. That's not a really good number to be looking at when you're talking about return on investment, right? So the reason they most often fail is because they are done in a top-down approach, and they are not done in what I call, they're done in unidirectionally. So it's a unidirectional conversation. People are corralled into a conference room. They're pepper sprayed with PowerPoint slides. They're told this is what's going to happen. This is what we're going to do. And it's very unidirectional. It is not at the level where their brains can link one to another, where they can actually engage themselves in the process and have a multi-directional conversation. Therefore, the change that they get tossed at is something that have to either do it, or they often say then leave the firm or leave the company or leave the organization if you don't want to, you know, go with our change. But, and that is, again, there's another reason they don't work too well is because, for example, if you were a groundskeeper and I came up to you and said, Yvonne, what does shareholder value mean? Now, you're a groundskeeper at a company. Your answer is going to be very different than the HR generalist or the accountant or the CEO. And so many organizations fail at helping everyone in the organization understand what value is for that particular organization, whether it be a school or a company making, you know, machine parts or an airline. It doesn't matter who it is. Does everyone in that organization understand what the value is that they're doing?
That's very, very true, and it reminds me of the story of a management story I often share with my students, where the people are working in a chicken plucking plant, and one manager said, "We pluck chickens. That's what we do. We pluck chickens," and morale was low, and you know, all of the metrics were low, and then a new manager came in, and he got everybody together, and he said, "What do we do here?" And they said, "We pluck chickens." And he said, "Actually, what we do here is we feed hungry families." And from that simple statement, it turned the whole company around, and people had a whole different approach to, why am I here? What does this company do? What is it all about? Can an organization,
So that's a great example. That's just terrific example. That what you said, we went from plucking feathers from chickens to we're feeding hungry families. Very different approach, right? Very different message.
Well, it changes the mindset of the people in the organization about the value that they're providing and why everybody is doing whatever it is that they're doing, regardless of their job in the company. Can an organization radically improve with little expense?
Absolutely. I love this experiment that I talk about in my book. It's also in one of Malcolm Gladwell's books, too, which I didn't know that after I wrote mine, but he cited this same experiment because it's very powerful and it answers your question. This was done in 1998, and it was done in by two, they weren't really neuroscientists, they were really more behavior psychologists. But they did this at the University of Nijmegen. And here's what they did. They took 42 adults and brought them into cubicles. And in the cubicles was a computer that gave specific questions from the game Trivial Pursuit. Okay, so you have 42 people sitting in 42 cubes answering Trivial Pursuit questions. Sounds like, what's so big about that? But here's what they did before those people went into the cubes. One group of the 42, they split them into three, so about 15 or so were told to write down on a piece of paper all the attributes of a Harvard professor. You got 5 minutes to write down every attribute of a Harvard professor. And they did that. Then they sent them in the queue. Then they put the second group and said, 5 minutes, write down every attribute of a typical secretary of a company. And so they did that. And then their third group was told, don't write anything on a piece of paper and just wait. So when the three groups went and did their trivial pursuit, here's what happened. The group that had to write down the attributes of a Harvard professor scored 28% higher than the group that didn't answer any of the, didn't have to write down anything. The group that went in that wrote all the things down about being a secretary, they scored the lowest. Now, think about this for a minute. How could just spending 5 minutes writing down the qualities of a Harvard professor change the way you perform on Trivial Pursuit? And what these behavioral psychologists found is because it changed the way your brain thinks. Your brain, every time you learn something, synaptic junctions are formed within, from a neuron to another neuron. And what happened is while these people were writing down those 5 minutes of a Harvard professor, all the things about them, their brain started to change, literally. The wiring was actually changing, which allowed them to do better on the Trivial Pursuit question. So what does this mean organizationally? Think about this. 5 minutes, a 28% return. 5 minutes. And so if you are engaging people in such a way that you are harboring an ability and an environment where they actually come in every day and learn something, contribute something, and they are given empathy, you radically change the game, radically, with no expense. This does not cost any money to do, but it's ignored. If you go into average company I walk into and I talk to people privately, they'll tell me the same story. They're pushed, they're not listened to, they're not asked any questions, there's no empathy. It's just get it done, whatever the task is.
So that's a great example from the book, then, of how empathy nets value to a
Absolutely.
Business. But not everyone has the ability to have empathy.
That is correct. That is absolutely correct. And it's the big missing piece in most change management programs. It's usually, again, very unidirectional and leaves out the whole engagement piece that you and I need as human beings to feel a sense of affinity to what we are about to do. And that's the missing link.
And some people think empathy is touchy-feely stuff. What do you say to those people?
Absolutely. And I would say, touchy-feely, but if you start to understand the brain, this is what the neuroscientist you touched on at the beginning of this program, we have this little thing in our brain called the analgia. It's a very meddlesome piece of our brain because guess what it does? It actually changes the way we behave based on all that touchy-feely stuff because it's the emotional processor of the human brain. And it does amazing things. And so when you are shown empathy, the analgia kicks into action. It actually causes physiochemical reactions in your brain, which then lead to different ways that you will express yourself facially. And Dr. Paul Ekman, who's in my book, did 50 years of research on that topic alone. And it becomes a human domino effect. How you actually project yourself, your facial expression, affects everyone around you. It changes behavior. It changes attitude. It has unbelievable impact simply by how you look, the look on your face alone.
I'm with you. So tell me, what kind of leadership then is needed in this new economy?
Well, the new economy is really the conceptual age. I mean, Dan Pink, the best-selling author, Dan Pink wrote a great book a couple years ago, which is still selling really well, but it's awesome. It's called The Drive. The book Drive that Dan Pink wrote is, he unpacks this new economy, which is the conceptual age, and that we are now moving towards such an overload of information that companies need to transform themselves to give more autonomy to individuals like me and you. We want autonomy. We want the ability to think on our own, to create, and to be heard. That whole paradigm is radically different than where we came out of from the information age, which was, here's the information, and we're going to line people up, and we're going to do a Six Sigma exercise, and everybody's going to get lean certified, blah, 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 and we're going to make widgets, and we're going to just be better every time. That's moving away. Now we're coming into, we've got all the information. We've got information overload at this point, but we want autonomy, and autonomy requires empathy. And that drives the engine of some of the highest-performing organizations, some that I looked at in this book. It's hard to believe the output they are getting simply because they leverage this aspect of our brain.
This is so exciting. And go ahead.
If I could share one real quick out of Washington, D.C., this is one of the best. It's a school called the Seed School. The students coming into the Seed School come in at sixth grade, and they're coming in at a third grade level in math and English, on average, 3 years behind their peers. They come into the Seed School. It's a school for disadvantaged youth, and it's in the poorest neighborhood of Washington, D.C. I've been there. I spent 3 days at this school. But here's the amazing piece. 98% of the graduates of the Seed School enroll in a four-year college, the highest enrollment rate of any public school in the United States. Now, if you go into the Seed School, they don't have anything else that any other school doesn't have. They don't have any additional consultants or high-tech software or nothing. No, these are the poorest students in the nation's capital coming into the Seed School, and 98% going off to college. How do they do it? Empathy. I walked with teachers and administrators in that school. They knew every student's name. There's 450 students. They would know all of their names. The headmaster made that as a criteria. You need to learn every student's name. Every student here has a voice and needs to be heard. These kinds of simple messages, and look what the output is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because they feel valued. That's what that's all about. What benefit will I receive or my listeners receive by reading your book, Link?
My book, Link, is, again, a plethora of stories, and I've only touched on a couple of them, that allow the reader, no matter who he or she is working for or doing, whether they're a student, a teacher, whether they're in software industry, airline, doesn't matter. There's enough in here where anyone from any background or any industry can read this and get the neurological and behavioral science underpinning to go, that's why, they'll get the that's why, and then examples that I unpacked from actual interviews that I did and visits that I did within a wide array of industries, from orchestra, like I said, to the rescue of coal miners, to the Seed School and the Fortune 500 companies and all the others in between, to show that this is applicable across any type of organization. Wherever there are two or more people, it's an organization. And our brain functions the same, whether we're in a restaurant or whether we're making high-tech iPads somewhere. It's the same.
And wherever in the world we're born, whatever our culture is, because it's just that's how the brain works.
Absolutely. There is no cultural divide. There's no demographics in terms of age, gender, none of these things. Because, again, we are human beings, and we all have a brain that's been designed. My brain is pretty much the same as yours, Yvonne, and everyone else's. It's just, yes, we have different personalities and things like that, but how our brain functions is pretty much the same, whether, again, we live on the North Pole or the South Pole or anywhere in between.
Absolutely. Can the concepts that you wrote in Link be applied to any type of organization?
Any type, because, again, the book is based on some of the most prominent work done by behavioral psychologists such as Andrew Meltzoff and neuroscientists such as V.S. Ramachandran and Vital Galiti. These are the top folks in their game who have really helped us understand just how our brain works. Now, again, we're just scratching the surface. Mirror neurons, the discovery of them, has been told to be the equivalent of the discovery of DNA to biology. And we know what that did. Once we understood DNA and the human genome, it allowed us to do what? Create medications and therapies that we never could have done if we didn't have that information. Now we know we have this mirror neuron system, and now we're understanding autism and a lot of other things because of it, but we're also understanding how you and I can actually link together in a more effective way because of this aspect of our brain, amongst other regions of the brain that affect the linking of one mind to another.
Wonderful. Do you have any... How can people reach you and learn more about Link or get a copy of the book?
The book, Link, is available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. I have a website, which is pretty simple. It's my name, johnsterpa.com. I have a blog there. They can enter the email address if they want to subscribe. I usually do a blog every couple of weeks, and I talk about a topic related to what we're discussing today. And I'm also on Twitter, johnsterpa, at johnsterpa, and Facebook, johnsterpa. So pretty much my name is across the board on the social media platforms, which is rare. I like to interact specifically on Twitter, especially because that to me is a great forum to talk internationally to folks all around the world in a tweet. So I kind of open myself up to pretty much every avenue on the social media front.
Good man. Do you have any closing comments for our listeners?
I do. I just, you know, encourage you to, no matter where you are in an organization, that you have a voice. Again, whether you're a student, whether you're an employee, or whether you're the leader of a large company, that everyone around you is made a better person, has more impact simply by how you link your mind to theirs. It really crosses all those cultural and demographic divides you talked about. You can make an impact simply by coming up to another person, listening to them, involving them, noticing how they react, and then helping them gain more knowledge. It's really that simple.
That is wonderful. Wonderful, simple. Anybody can do it regardless of what level you are. Thank you very much for the fascinating interview, John. And thanks to all of you for listening to the Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy show. I'm your host, Yvonne Brown, coming to you from Chicago, Illinois, and I'll see you next month on the second Saturday at 2 p.m. Central Time. Until then, I'll leave you with the thought for the day from Bill Cosby, who just had his 70th birthday recently. He said, "I don't know the key to success, but the key to failure is trying to please everybody." Remember to always join us on the second Saturday each month. In the meantime, visit us online at blogtalkradio.com/Yvonne-F-Brown to share your comments about today's show. While you're there, become a friend of the show and use the comment box to provide some feedback on today's show. It was fascinating, straightforward, educational, and superb. Thank you very much, John.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. If you have a topic that you would like to learn more about, please send it to me at yvonne@yvonnefbrown.com. You may also use the contact page at www.yvonnefbrown.com, yvonnefbrown.com, to share your comments about today's program or to ask me a question. Until next time, this is Yvonne Brown saying, each day you have the opportunity to get out there on life's playing field or sit on the sideline. It's always more rewarding to get in the game and play.